You are listening to Radiant Creators, a collaborative project composed of people whose passion, purpose, and dedication requires forging their own unique path of empowerment and livelihood. A Radiant Creator isn't making a living, they are living. This interview took off into an improvisational exploration into Les Stroud's view and experience of a creative life. Les was able to delve into and articulate his life effort as a creator. Much of the interview is centered around exploring this quote from Mr. Stroud: "In the adventure known as life, there are some that live it vicariously and enjoy the ride from a safety of an armchair, and that's good. But there are those who have a few chances to realize incredible and life-changing experiences, and though they don't repeat them, they carry with them a growth in personal philosophy for the rest of their lives. And there are those for who a taste is never enough, for who the lust for adventure is nearly insatiable. And if you add to that the overwhelming desire to create and to share, then you get where I reside. For the end of one adventure only signifies the beginning of another." Our desire at Radiant Creators is to interview inspiring people and extract inspiration into an audible elixir for listeners. This interview is exactly that.
There's a great episode, episode 23, Papua New Guinea, where at the end...
The Heiwa.
Yeah, you did a ritual with them, and you were the first outsider to really have ever done it. You ended that episode with an amazing little paragraph that you read, and I'll just read the first and last sentence rather than the whole thing. It says, "In the adventure known as life, there are some that live it vicariously and enjoy the ride from the safety of an armchair, and that's good. For the end of one adventure only signifies the beginning of another." So that's the first and last sentence of that. It's quite deep, and it always struck me, and I've always wanted to ask, where did the inspiration for that come from? Is that something you've been working on for a while, or was it spontaneously written at that time?
I mean, it was pretty much spontaneously written at that time, just on a technical matter. When it came to Survivor Man and Beyond Survival and different series I've done, I do tend to try to wax a bit philosophic, especially in my final sort of thing to camera, or it might be a voiceover during the credits or something like that. In fact, in many ways, I kind of prided myself on taking the time to close off every film I did with some kind of reflective, meaningful commentary. And I know my head of editing, Barry Farrell, he always loved them. He always like, "Oh, that one just nailed it. It brought it home." So I definitely, there was not an insincere calculation, but definitely it was part of my process. However, that said, in writing that one, what was happening was Survivor Man had been around for quite a bit of time at that point. And I was wanting to move on. I was wanting to do other work. And that was supposed to be, and it did not end up being so, but that was supposed to be my final Survivor Man episode. And so I was definitely feeling a little bit philosophic as I was closing off that particular thought, for sure. I can also say that you know, that particular commentary itself was, you know, when I say, you know, vicariously, and that's good. What I really meant by that was I didn't want to offend people who are unable to get out physically and adventure. And for many people, all they have is the magazines, the books, the videos, the television shows, even the music, the podcasts. That's all they have to experience larger world adventure, especially wilderness adventure. And so that opening line was meant to say, hey, you're all in on this. This isn't just for a bunch of healthy, fit rock climbers. This is for all of us, even those of you who've been watching me for years from your chair.
There's always a beginning of the desire for adventure. And wherever somebody's at, it's good to honor that, because, yeah, not everybody is able to get away, or they just haven't started yet. And that always seemed like a challenge, and a real challenge to adventure in life. So it always struck me as just a very powerful moment at the end of that show.
Yeah, and the final line is, I mean, to be honest, brutally honest with myself, it felt a little bit Like I was dabbling very close to a cliche line, but it's still, it was, you know, sometimes cliches just make sense. And this line, you know, the end of one adventure is the beginning of another, it did make sense to me personally speaking. And, you know, I remember knowing that I just need this passion, need this adventure in my life, became very evident to me. Actually, one particular day, I just finished filming the series Beyond Survival, where I did all of these various ceremonies around the world, these earth ceremonies. I was away for 10 months of travel. And I was back home. I was home for maybe 3 days, and a friend of mine came over, and we were standing there, and he was just about to leave for the Antarctic. And I'd been home for 3 days after being on the road around the world for 10 months, circling the globe 8 times in 10 months. He told me about going to the Antarctic, and I was instantly envious. And I just thought, oh, I am so pathetic. I'm like, can't I just come home and relax for a few months? Like, oh, no, 3 days. And I'm like, you're going where? Aw, oh, I want to go. So I knew at that point I was pathetic.
Oh, God, yeah. For the end of one adventure only signifies the beginning of another. Well, there's, I think, William Blake in one of his books that he has all the artwork in. It might be Jerusalem, I think it was called. There's, I forget his name, but the main character in that book, he actually has his head in a bucket of fire. And that signified the, like, what inspiration is to the artist. You know, it's like you're constantly stuck living with your head in this bucket of inspiration of fire. And you never get a break.
And wow, that's a powerful imagery. That's imagery that you got to chew on for a while to really grasp, get your head, no pun intended, get your head around it.
Get your head around it, because it's both a blessing and a bit of torture. You know, and so I'll send you that plate and what picture and what book that's from, what page it is.
I think it's only. I'll have to apologize. You're about to hear my cat meowing.
That's fine.
And she's approaching me. I can see it in her eyes. She's like, okay, why is there a laptop on your lap? That's my place. I think, you know, is it a torture? I think it's a torture if we fail to understand it, if we fail to understand our own passions, if we've not been seeking our own passions. But yet we succumb to them, like, say, endless adventure. I can understand the feeling of the torture, but that's not what – I don't think we're meant to swim in that area of torture. I think we're meant to understand it and just go with it. I've forgiven – it's almost like forgiving yourself for wanting to be adventuring. And I've forgiven myself a long time ago why do you have to forgive yourself? Well, because – There are many other voices that would say you're being narcissistic, you're being selfish, you're being, decadent. I'm sorry we're tangenting here, but think of one phrase that someone will always say when you come back from some great adventure, and what is it? It's this. It's like a sister-in-law or, I don't know, your mother or somebody, and they'll go, well, are you finished gallivanting around the world now? It's like you're supposed to be feel guilty for enjoying this planet, and I got over that a long time ago.
Yeah, you'll oftentimes return and you hear a line like, "Oh, it must be nice." It's like
exactly. You know, I'm sorry if we continue to tangent.
Let's tangent. This is what it's about. Let's keep going. Yeah,
that's what I was guessing with you. Yeah. Well, I remember many, many years ago, after I finished my very first big adventure of my lifetime, and I'd spent a year living in the bush, and I made this little film, and I was presenting it in a theater, and a woman got up at the back after it showed, and I was doing the Q&A, and she said, well, I don't understand how you can afford to go and do that for a whole year. And you could tell she was kind of a little perturbed, like, some jealousy, that kind of thing. And I was very sincere, but I just thought, well, you can't afford. It's not about affording. You just have to do it, you know. And I'm not suggesting it's about going into debt on your credit card. I'm saying you'll never be able to afford to take a year off and quote unquote gallivant around the world or go live in the bush for a year. You just have to go do it. And so. Again, that leads to that thought that there are a lot of voices out there that. You know, I think in a little bit of enviousness, envy and a little bit of jealousy, see people adventuring and maybe want to bring it down a bit. I'm not trying to go dark on you, but you know, maybe want to bring it down a bit. And I'm all about, you know what, even going back to that quote from the show, even if you're sitting in a chair, you can still adventure. And I'm one of these people that wants to facilitate your adventuring.
I love it. Yeah, because adventure comes in a lot of different forms.
Hello?
Sorry, I was on mute. Yeah, well, adventure comes in a lot of forms. So adventure can be travel, but then for the people who are wanting to adventure who are not traveling, it's very helpful because sometimes adventure is quitting your job, saying, I can't stand this anymore. I'm going to do something entrepreneurial. I don't know what. This is an adventure. It's scary, but it's where life is. And I find that really adventure, maybe the real core of adventure is going where your life takes you, where the experience of life takes you. Because I find that when we have a hard time, when we feel like we're off course, it's when we're not keeping up with ourselves. There's this call to adventure and we're just not showing up. We're not keeping up with our own soul's desire to create, our own desire for adventure, whatever form that might come in. And then also it seems that to keep up with ourselves, it's a muscle. We have to build stamina to adventure, to follow our passions.
You're right on the money. I mean, we have to give ourselves permission, and it might be stereotypical to take the word adventure and utilize it with the thought process of rock climbing or paddling a canoe or being off in some foreign country. That's not it. And I think that quote that you took from my show, I think I say something about in the adventure we know as life or we call life. That's what I meant. It didn't have to be being in Papua New Guinea. And I've often said that, my big thing, it's about reason too. You know, it's about the why of what we do. It's the reason of what we do. And my reason for having created Survivor Man was based on my passion for nature, the natural world. So my reason was I wanted to connect you to the natural world. And so I did so by going to Papua New Guinea and places like that. And yet when I talk now, I always say, look, you know, you don't have to go to Madagascar. Just go down to the corner park and kick your shoes off and, you know, avoid the dog poop, but walk in the grass and feel that connection to the natural earth. To me, that's the adventure. So the adventure is absolutely our lives. And sure, I'm obsessive about connecting to nature. You don't have to be. Your adventure could revolve around, I don't know, numbers. It could revolve around friends. It could revolve around music. It could revolve around design. I don't know. But the adventure is definitely life. And you said something about, you know, checking in with yourself. And the big line that you just dropped, which I think is the most important, is you just got to show up. Now, you hear that now as another stereotypical or another cliche. Oh, just show up. But you got to hear it. It's a big line. You know, the difference between living an effective life and not is whether or not you show up for it. What does that mean? Seek your heart. You know what it means. I can't tell you what it means, but you know what it means to just show up for your own life. And here's the thing that I talk a lot with, say, high school kids who are 16 and who maybe, you know, don't know what it means, and you got to accept that. They're still young. Well, okay then. Let's say you're 36 and you don't know what it means. All right. Just start doing. Start, you know, get up off the couch. Do things, because one of those things is going to go click, and then you will know what showing up for your own life means.
There's always something that moves us. I think that a real way to get there is there's always something. Like that day, there's something that interests you. And so often we don't do any, people don't do anything that actually interests them. So to me, that's a real key there. Hey, what interests you today? There's something. And oftentimes we really don't get where we're going or figure it out until we start. So I think that a great way for people to find it is just, what interests you today? You know, have you always wanted to make a tintype camera and take old pictures? Well, go to the library, get a book on it, do some research. It's just about taking every day. It seems to me like the step is there before you, and when the following one needs to be taken, you'll be led to it. It's just taking a step every day, and the next one follows.
Oh, I absolutely agree. You're tapping into a few things with what you're saying. I remember a story. I was on a canoe trip one time with some friends, and my friend's wife. I can picture it to this day. She was out at the portage, and I'm still sitting in the canoe, and we were, you know, just gabbing on about this and that. And I said, "Well, tell me, you know," I said, "if you could do anything you wanted, no holds barred. You know, what would it be? And she looked at me, and it was the saddest response I've ever heard in my entire life. And she just said, there's nothing I really want to do. And my heart just sunk because I didn't have an answer to, I didn't have a response to that. Maybe I'm not supposed to, but I just thought, I don't know how to respond to that, because I have 1,000 things that I want to do. If you took my legs away, God forbid, there would still be 1,000 things I would want to do that I could do. And so I expanded that later on to, you know, what I do when I talk to my kids as they were growing up. And I said, look, you know, my son Logan, if you're not sure, just start doing things, because something will show up on your table where you'll go, ooh, I like that. You know, my son just finished school for photography, and he wants to do photography. Along the way, he meets a guy who does forest firefighting and is the only guy he knows that has who got licensed for it, and so has a special license to go and do forest firefighting and take pictures, which become, you know, pictures that nobody else on the planet can have. And so now my son's going down that road because he fell onto it, and he fell onto it because he just hopefully because I convinced him to ask these questions of what. And I love the way you phrased it. Okay, let's drop the whole what do you want to do in life thing, because that's a big thing to bite off. How about what do you want to do today? I love that brings it home. And if I can expand on this a bit more.
Please do.
Well, I'm obviously, you know, or maybe not obviously, I'm a fan of motivational quips. I'm a fan of motivational listening to, I've listened to this, that, and the other podcast, read this, that, and the other book, watched this, that, and the other video. You know, I've subscribed to the Jack Canfield program. I'm just now getting into the Tim Ferriss podcast. I've, you know, gone down all of these different roads. And I mean, I'm 56 and still learning. And I discovered something just yesterday, you know, and it was through the Tim Ferriss stuff. And the guy's got a lot of great things to say. But I sort of realized, you know, all these different men and women that I listen to, they're all often self-proclaimed type A personalities. And I thought, I'm not – I mean, I might be described by my ex-wife as a type A personality because she's type C, but I'm not really. I'm really just a type B. If you look up – I actually looked it up. I looked up type A personality, and I was like, yeah, nope, that's actually not me. Great. Okay, these guys are very type A and they're self-proclaimed. Okay, well, what about the rest of us who need the advice that is more geared towards where we are, which is our type B? Still there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah. What about the rest of us who are still in that sort of type B category? And I started thinking about that, and I thought, where do I really get my most spine tingling, I've got the chills, a warm and fuzzy feeling type of advice that really connects with me? Is it through these incredibly intelligent people like Tim Ferriss, Jack Canfield, and, you know, the guys from The Secret and all? Is it through them? Or is it some? And then I thought, wait a minute. When I listen to Hans Zimmer speak, he's a film scorer, or I listen to a half a dozen different very talented creative artists, that's when I get my spine tingling. And I realize that all of what they say can be summed up in one sentence. Just go do it. Mm. You want to write another – just go do it. You want to write another – you want to write a book? Just go do it. And so I've learned over the years that taking all of these bits of advice and reading stuff about Gandhi or Jack Canfield and everybody in between, you know, for me – my greatest way to continue on in my successful endeavors is to just get up and create. I'm a creator. I might be listed as an adventurer. I might be that machismo survivor man dude. But in the end, I like to think of myself as an artist, a guy who creates inspirational work that shows people how beautiful it is to connect to nature. And I've seen the results of people who've gone off and connected to nature because of my work. It's like, that's where I shine. I'm 56. I'm still figuring it out.
I like that. 56 and still figuring it out. It seems like one thing I noticed from your work, all of it, it does really feel like you're writing it and creating it from a perspective of just getting started. You never come off as an expert. You come off as somebody who's just figuring it out as you go along. There's confidence, but it's almost like your confidence just comes from your confidence in yourself.
Well, that's a beautiful thank you. That's a very intuitive observation of me. And I'll tell you a story. I heard this once. An elderly lady said, "You know, I think," and this is just playful sort of psychological kind of considerations here, "but I think everybody has in their mind how old they are, and some of us are very senior in our minds, and these are people that you'll see, they'll be 18 years old and they're afraid to take chances, or they're just very persnickety because in their mind, you know, they're actually quite senior, or they're very childlike in their minds, and it takes a while to figure it out. But after I started to think, okay, how old am I really in my mind? How old am I? If there was no mirror in my house, or I looked at the mirror and it was a magic mirror, what age would my face be? And I realized that most of my actions are centered around being 29 years old. And I think about this because I think physically I feel like I'm 29, the way I exercise, the way I want to be fit and all that. And so professionally, with what I create, and this observation you just made, I think it's because in many ways I feel strong and confident like a 29-year-old, but psychologically – I still don't feel like I've made it with the big boys. Oh no, those are those 50-year-olds who they're the mentors and the smart ones. I'm still down here at 29 trying to make my way in the world. And you know, with Survivor Man and Beyond Survival and my music and anything I've written, I still feel like, yeah, I'm just a 29-year-old trying to get to that place of a 50-year-old. Now in physical truth, I'm 56. But my mind is down there, and I think it's an interesting exercise to do, really be honest with yourself about how old you are. And I'll give you an example, an external example. I have a guy that I had a lot of issues with communicating. And one day I thought, wait a minute. How old do I think he is in his mind? And it just hit me. He's 13 years old. He jokes in a way that is like a 13 – I mean, he's a 45-year-old successful salesman. But he really interacts like a 13-year-old boy. And all the examples were there. And it was really interesting because one day I was talking with an associate. I said, you know, I've been getting along with this guy for about a year now, and here's what I did. I put this thing where I figured out how old he is. And my associate, the associate that knew us both, said, oh, my God. He goes, you know what, Les? When he was 13, his father went bankrupt and his entire world caved in. And all he ever did up until that point was go on fishing trips with his dad. And it all stopped while they had this big family thing. Now this guy who I had the issues with is 45 years old. He's a successful salesman. All he talks about is his big fishing boat and his trips to deep sea fishing. And that's all. And maybe in that case it was trauma induced. But my whole point of the story is he's – to this day exists in this state of mind that is somewhere around that 13-year-old age group. And when I would speak to him like he was 13, we got along. There's the key point. There's the moral of the story. When I recognized, you know, this guy is that age, or my ex-sister-in-law was always 70 in her mind, if I could speak to them with that knowledge, we all of a sudden got along. I mean, I'm speaking about interpersonal stuff here now in philosophy, but it also helps me to understand myself. Yeah, I'm still not 56, man. I am still 29 in my head, and that's what drives me for better or for worse.
For sure. Well, we tend to equate, you know, wisdom with age, but I think that, you know, the getting of wisdom, the pursuing of wisdom, and then, you know, our age physically are not necessarily connected. And I wish there was a different word for wisdom where you could say a person's wise beyond their years. Wisdom is not necessarily attached to age, and so it reminds me of that when you say that. With that
quick subject on that. Yeah, if wisdom was associated with age, there wouldn't be any stupid old people. Think about that for a second. Think about how many elderly people you know are still not getting it together. They might be elderly, but they did not become wise. And there are 20-year-olds that are very wise.
Especially if you've, of course, you have, and I have some. you know, you travel the world, you start realizing, I mean, I've met 8-year-old kids that are wiser than most old people that I know. It's amazing. So it's a personal choice. It's a focus on wisdom, but a person has to have that inclination or they don't bother. And yeah, they'll stay 13 or 20 their whole lives. That one question people oftentimes ask, like, you know, what are you going to do with your life? I think that's a neurosis we get as kids that messes so many of us up, because really it's, what do you want to do with today? And nothing's really off the table in the creative life, because it could just be, I want to make the perfect grass-fed burger today. That's it. And you do it. And I'm telling you, the next inspiration will come. And before you know it, the end of one adventure will only be the beginning of another. Like, who knows what you'll do next?
Well, so. I mean, even in, I mentioned Tim Ferriss earlier, you know, and again, he's in a handful of 100 different excellent speakers on successful living. But again, with that type A sort of leaning, and you know, and he said, just start the day by making your bed, because it'll make you feel like you just accomplished something. And it's a small, make it, I love the analogy, making the perfect grass-fed burger. I mean, there's a point of pride in that. And every, when you do something like that, it just tells you you can. You know, everything, and everything else is just a matter of scale.
I think we have to start with the perfect grass-fed burger, making our bed in the morning, just doing, going where the day takes us on some creative venture, and nothing's off limits, whatever works for you, as long as it's moral and legal. And with that, you know, then we build, I really believe there is we have to keep up with ourselves, keep up with our daily creative ventures. And then also, I really believe that there is a creative adventure stamina that we have to build. We have to be able to stick with our daily creativity.
Yes, you touched on that earlier too, about developing a muscle in that way. That's very true, and I think it has something to do with our own comfort level, our own familiarity. When we establish a familiarity with going after our desires, creating our own world, getting up in the morning and trying to accomplish something, it absolutely creates a familiarity muscle memory. In, and I'll just get a little bit, you know, ethereal or whatever, in our soul, in our mind, in our hearts, in our emotions, in our psyche. Muscle memory with my biceps, if I do chin-ups, sure, yeah, I know that absolutely works on that physical level, but there is muscle memory that is much more spiritual, that builds within our own hearts and our own passion. And so I've never used that before, and I love the way you said that. We can do that. We take that one little step and we make that perfect burger. When we take that one little step and we make the bed this morning, the next time it just is a fraction easier to say, well, now I've made the perfect grass-fed burger. Tomorrow I'm going to make it, and then I'm going to make the most awesome chocolate milkshake to go with. I know we're being a little slightly funny and facetious in the way we're describing it, but the analogy works, because you just have to put that to anything else in your life. It could be to do with your car, your office, your friends, your cat, your couch. I don't know, but it's a good analogy of just building that muscle memory within our own psyche of succeeding in life.
Oh yeah, and definitely, I can tell people who are going to be listening to this will definitely be making a lot of grass-fed burgers. And then so, hey, that's how you start. If you're lost, go get some grass-fed hamburgers.
Well, you know, I mean, if I'm to give you some personal analogy, let me get personal for you as far as where I'm at right now. So, it's like confessional time, right?
So I'm a minister, so it's all right.
Yeah. I'm 56. I hit on how to finally make things happen in my life starting at about the age of 30. Then I took 10 years to try and really capitalize on those. I'm very much a late bloomer. I got to tell you, I'm so much a late bloomer in everything that I do. Survivor Man didn't begin till I was 39, you know, was when I started kind of pitching the series. And I've had 17 years of Survivor Man and everything to do with it, doing the Beyond Survival series, writing books, performing on stage with some of the greatest artists, you know, that I've loved over the years, all of that. And yet as I sit here today on a deck, you know, with this laptop on my lap talking to you, just like I am so often, I'm literally, you know, in a position where, well, for example, I launched Survivor Man TV last year. Confessional, it ain't doing so well. It may very well be an unsuccessful venture on my part. And how many times have we heard, you know, people who've done really well say, hey, listen, man, I failed a lot more than I succeeded. Well, I'm one of those guys. I'm one of those guys to say, listen, man, for every Survivor Man, there's another 30 things I tried that did not work. And here I am today, literally with a bit of a fresh, clean slate. So you've got a guy who ostensibly looks like someone successful because of Survivor Man and my music and my books and all the things I've done. Yet here I am with a clean slate, literally getting up going, what am I going to do now? I mean, I'm going to quote somebody a little bit cliche, but I watched the film a couple of years ago, and Bono talks about having hit all of the marks and being the biggest band in the world and then wondering what to do next. And he says, you know, you go from one big thing to another, but in between, right in between, there's nothing, nothing. And that's what I feel like right now. I'm right in between, literally with nothing. Do I have a financial nest egg to ease the sting of paying the rent? Yes, I'm a little bit okay for a while, but I still, you know, I'm not signed to a TV network with anything right now. I'm not producing anything. Well, nobody's paying me to do anything right now. I'm in between. I've got nothing. So with everybody listening to this, in many ways, regardless of what I've done or what I'm known for, I'm exactly where they are. Exactly where they are. I have to get up in the morning and do the right thing next. I have to make the grass-fed burger. I have to act on whatever my next passion is. And, you know, I've been working on my music for the longest time. I have albums coming out. I've got this show called Mother Earth, which is all about celebrating nature. I've been working on it for 10 years, and it hasn't connected yet. So I'm going to get up and work on it still because it's my passion. So I think that's important. You know, when I watch or I listen to someone like Hans Zimmer talk, you know, because I bought the masterclass, so it's Hans Zimmer for film scoring, which is something I used to do and I want to do more of. I'm a baby at that level. I'm doing baby steps for film scoring, even though I've done a few little projects here and there. So I'm calling people and trying to make it all go. Well, I'm just as insecure as anybody listening to this at this very moment. I carry the same insecurities I did before Survivor Man took off. So what am I going to do? I'm going to get up and just start. And that's what I learned from listening to all of the creative people, not the type A motivational speakers, but all of the creative people who endeavor to do a keynote or whatever. I've learned that the bottom line is they all say, look, just get up and start. And, you know, that's my confession to you as I sit here right now. I got a coffee beside me and my cell phone and this laptop. I'm talking to you. And I'm looking over a place where I live right now in Southern Oregon. And I'm in track pants with a T-shirt. You know, I got to finish this call and get up and start just like everybody else does. And so do you. You know, you're doing this podcast, however you're going to present this interview. And someone might say, look how successful he is. He's got it. But you know, when we finish talking, what happens next is all up to you, and what happens next is all up to me, for me. And what happens next for anybody hearing this is only up to them. And so now I sound like a motivational speaker, but my encouragement is, okay, get up and make your version of the grass-fed burger, the perfect burger.
Yeah, because it seems like, and I know a place where I struggle is, you don't necessarily always know what's next. You just know what you have scheduled for today or what you're going to figure out to schedule for today. It seems that I guess the only way to, create that future, to build that creative stamina to, I would say, live a creative life and make money doing it is to, show up every day and just build that stamina. Because we don't always know. Like with this new project that we're doing, the Radiant Creators Project, we have a lot of it has evolved since we started. So it was like, okay, we're going to start. We started, and now we have great ideas and new pieces of this project that are coming together and happening that they didn't exist and they wouldn't have existed if we didn't just start. And sometimes people will ask, well, what's your big plan? What's your business plan? How are you going to make money? And when you have an answer like it's coming, believe me, we take that seriously. But I don't know. All I know today is the grass-fed burger and interviewing less. And you know what? Then tomorrow, there's no dearth of avenues. It's just which one is going to present itself. So the creative process creates the process.
Well, and you touched on something there. I cannot stress this enough. I never, ever endeavored to do what I've done for the sake of money, ever. And so it's like, I get it. I know the crunch of finances. Hey, you know what? I was 45 years old. Survivor Man had been on air a number of years. And at the age of 45 was the first time in my entire life that, according to government statistics, I actually broke the poverty line for what I was bringing home financially. I was 45 years old. So certainly nothing that I have done has been about the money. It has been about creating. And I just am in love with and addicted to creating. You know, years ago, when music in the larger pop culture sense of it was becoming massive throughout the world, artists would record two albums a year, every year. That's why there was this massive onset of incredible music, you know, between 65 and 1975. Now artists create one album every 3 years. And if I was to be a little dark or a little harsh, I'd say I have no respect for that at all. What happened to the power and the love of creation, of constantly creating? This is what I love. And I take a lot of flack. I'll tell you, I take a lot of flack every time I do something outside of Survivor Man. It's like, whoa, don't put me in that box. Survivor Man's just one thing I did. Sure, it was who I am, and I'll wear that badge proudly. But I also did Beyond Survival, which was all about Earth ceremonies. I also do so much music and presentations and things like that. It's so I love being versatile and going on to the next creation. To me, prolific. You know, I what did I do? Again, I get tipping, going back into that world of motivational this and that. I guess I don't know what other, you know, motivational email or whatever is I get that I signed up for, and I said, describe, you know, what you want to be or what you have. And I said, I want to have a creative, I think I said, a vibrant, creatively prolific career. And the key word for me was prolific. And you cannot be prolific unless you just start. You know, guys like Frank Zappa, you know, or Prince, or, I mean, they recorded and created so much more than we even know. They just never stopped. And I really admire that process of just get up and keep creating, you know?
Yeah, there's something that you mentioned about how people put out less albums than they used to. There's a great documentary, and I watched it just the other night. I've watched it like 15 times over the years. It's called The Cruise by Speed Levitch, and he's a tour guide in New York on the tour buses. And when he was asked, they said, how come buildings used to be beautiful and now, well, they're not? And he said, he thought about it for a second, and he said, because people used to, he said, I think it's because people used to feel beautiful and now they don't. And so it really strikes me how when it comes to bands, you know, musicians putting out content, now it's easier than it ever was to record. I mean, now you can have a recording studio at home or in a warehouse for very little. I mean, it seems like it's gotten easier. And as it's gotten easier, people put out less. And I've always thought to myself, what you don't do when it's hard, you're never going to do when it's easy. So it's just strange times that we're living in when it comes to creative output. But I'm glad that you say you are addicted to and love creating. So it seems like you have a very, you know, positive addiction. That's what we need.
Yeah. And, you know, here's one of the ways, I mean, there's so many awesome ways to look at creativity. And here's, you know, sort of two quick stories on this. One is this: the way I view what I put out in the world, I look at it like, once I've done it and put it out, and I'll backspeak for a second and say, the first time I ever created anything, I was 30 years old. 30. not 18, not 24, not 26. I was 30. It took me that long. And it was my first ever film, Snowshoes and Solitude, and my first ever CD, my Lestrade debut CD in the same year. I held those two pieces in my hand. As amateur as I look back at they are now, and I was euphoric. I discovered the euphoria of completion. So you said, we said earlier, just show up. The next one is just finish. Always finish. I had this euphoria of completion in my hands. And now I am so bent on being prolific I'm addicted to that euphoric feeling of completing things. And when I complete something, what I like to feel is, and I've seen this in my own work, and it could be in anything. Doesn't have to be music and film. It doesn't have to be books you write. It doesn't have to be that kind of stereotypical creativity. It could be, like you say, the grass-fed burger. When you put it out there, it takes on its own energy. And it will do things in this world, in our society, that you may or may not, but most likely will never even know. And isn't that wonderful that something you create takes on a life of its own? You get snippets of it brought back to you. You know, certainly I've had, you know, lots to do with Survivor Man, but let's take a piece of my music. I got a song called Dark Side, and the refrain is, everybody's got a dark side. It ain't such a positive song. I get this message one time on Facebook, and the guy just says, you know, I love your music, yada, yada. Whenever I get really down and depressed, I put on your song Dark Side, and it brings me out of my funk. And like the Leonard Cohen type style of music, I realized it's because, and he said so, he just realized someone else out there feels the same way. So you see, I wrote the song a long time ago. I spent the money and the time in recording it. I produced it and put it online and on my CDs. And then it's let go. I let go of that creativity. And that energy is bouncing around out there in the world. And at least I know one guy said it actually affects his life in a positive way. And when I began each and every Survivor Man show, I did it with the meditation in the morning. Whatever I do today, let it affect somebody in a positive way. Let it bring about a positive influence in their life and inspire them. And I don't even know what that means. I just know that the energy has power when it's out there. And that's the energy. That's what I want it to do. I don't want it to have a dark energy. I want it to go out there and do those things. Anybody listening to this, it absolutely is true. It absolutely works. Create something and watch it happen. Watch it happen. Watch it go out there. And this is, I think, the important part of creativity for me, is that the be-all and end-all of it is that once you put it out there, it does beautiful things. And the best part is it will do beautiful things and you'll never, ever know. I love that, Mystique.
Yeah, that was definitely something I wanted to ask you about. Was I saw in an interview once, you said that before, whatever I do today, just let it result in something that is inspiring, creates a positive influence in people's lives. And so I know you've already touched on it, but you mentioned it works. So how do you think that our intention, so if we do set our intent, if we say, you know, you figure out what your intention is, what your creative intention is, what your intention is in life. So how do you feel that affects our life? If you start the day in the morning, you make your bed, you get your grass-fed burger going, then you sit down and you go, I am going to create this day. I'm going to pre-pave it. Maybe I don't know all the details, but I have my intention. Do you believe that truly is a creative act, that that's going to affect that day?
Well, I don't think it's a creative act in and of itself. I think it gives the baseline and it sets your creative acts on their right course. I absolutely believe that the putting the right intention behind anything will manifest it. Now, let's say it doesn't. Okay, it doesn't pan out in the end. But the thing is, you in your own self can rest and say, you know what? My karma's clean. I came from the right place. It didn't work out. I created Survivor Man TV, and I don't have enough memberships to keep it going. It didn't work. That's okay. I never came from a bad place while creating it. I made the Survivor Man TV show from a certain – it worked. And I can feel like – and I came from a good place in creating it. I didn't cheat it. I didn't phone it in. I create something, and it works. And so if you've done this intent in the morning that you want to – do something, the intention is for good, let's face it, some people could intend bad things, but let's just throw that away for now and say we're all intending something good. Then even when it doesn't work out, your karma's clean. You can go to sleep that night, start again the next day and go, well, you know, I gave it all I got. If I look back on my first film, Snowshoes and Solitude, this goes into now this other realm of giving it all you got. I can point out all of the amateur filmmaking things about it right now, yet I don't feel bad about it at all because I know I put my whole life into that, my whole thing into it. So if you set your intention in the morning, you've set it. Now, whatever happens, come what may, at least you know you were starting from the right place. It's very important.
I like where we're going with all this. So I like the idea of just show up and then set your intent for the day and give it all you've got and just finish and know mm-hmm. the euphoria of completion. And then, you know, once you've completed something, there it has a life of its own. And I like that because I've heard it in some esoteric writings, and I can't think of one to quote exactly right now, but the idea of a tulpa, where it's a wizard or a magical being would just contemplate someone to help them, or, you know, someone to carry their bags for them. Oftentimes they were servants, but basically and they would actually manifest a being, a tulpa. And so it's like you actually, and that tulpa actually had a life of its own. It was a living being, sort of, not completely, but it was alive. So it's like you really are creating a tulpa, a new life form that's going to go live its life. It's almost like you create a creative being and let it go.
Yeah, and I think you used the word I was just about to use, so we're on the same page, and that's esoteric. And I've found that throughout what I do, I've been able to not be esoteric about it all, but be very pragmatic about it all. Because, you know, lots of times if I begin to speak in that more heady sort of way, or I'm looking at something in a philosophic way, it runs the risk of becoming very esoteric. And I always like to say, hey, look, you know what? In the end, I still want to go have a Guinness. In the end, I still want to go make love to my partner. In the end, I still want to watch a TV show and go mind numb for a minute while I watch the Avengers movie. You know, I still want to eat a good grass-fed burger. So I like to also pull life into the pragmatic and the practical, because the thing is, we are here. You know, speaking along those lines, you know, I don't understand fully life and spirit, but I do know this, or I do feel this. We are here present in physical flesh, and there is a power. You know, I think a lot of times people get, as an escapism, they get a little too thoughtful of, well, I almost can't wait until I'm back to being a spirit again. But a lot of the writings and the readings that I've done, and that, you know, you often hear about almost like the envy of the spiritual world of who we are as humans. Now, why? Because we have access to our flesh, our bones, we have access to enacting upon our intent. We can set our intent spiritually. We can set in motion in our minds the concept of even spiritual helpers along the way. But we have the flesh and the bones in these fingers. We have the hands. We're walking on the grass. And so we're the ones who get to manifest all of this talk, all of this discussion, all of this creativity. We are the, you know, which in many ways I suppose is saying we don't get the excuse of saying, oh, I can't wait till I become my higher self. And when I'm my higher self, I'll be perfect then. And I'll avoid all this crap of this life on earth. And say, whoa, 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 whoa. You're on earth. This is life on earth. You have skin, you know, covering your bones and your muscles. And they're there and they're meant to be used for the intent you just set out. This is a great discussion. I never get to have this kind of talk.
Well, that's the idea of this podcast. Well, yeah, I believe that when it comes to spirituality and incorporating that into our lives, I mean, everybody likes going to Sedona and walking through the New Age stores, but it doesn't take too long before you go, this is a little weak. I can't really, like, you know, make a grass-fed burger with this, and these people are all vegans anyway. So I think that life and really is, I call it like a multidimensional paradox. And when you're able to Grok, all facets of it that you know of, and knowing that there's even more than you're aware of, where you know that, well, yeah, the body is real, but the body isn't real. You know, it's like time exists. I have an appointment, but there's no time. So I think that people get too hung up on kind of quoting Spirituality 101, these things that we know that definitely make life more powerful, but you're here, and this is where the fun is. You know, and I think it's just grasping the reality of all of it. And the more we can grasp all at once, just the better it becomes. So, yeah, I don't think that I'd say, yeah, people do esoteric their way out of the experience of life. And that I don't think was ever truly the idea of esoteric science.
No, I think the idea was to find ourselves. And what ends up happening is in states of depression, states of frustration, states of anxiety, states of loss, that we can then use the more esoteric teachings as an excuse to not be physical. But you know what? We are physical. And our physicality is short. We only have somewhere between birth and death, you know, whether that's, you know, 20 years, sadly, or 104 years. You know, my goal is to live to 105 years old. That's my goal. And I want to be spry in doing so. But that, in the end, is all we really have, is this physicality. And we cannot use the spiritual teachings, the esoteric teachings, the religious teachings as excuses to not be physical. And that, I think, has been my thing for the longest time, you know, is to try to always bring things into the pragmatic so I feel it effective in this life, in this short life that I have, hoping that it's going to be 104 years, which I'm sure when I'm 103 will seem really short.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as we cultivate the, I guess, multidimensional reality of existence, then it all becomes more real on every level. So to me, I've cultivated a more spiritual presence, a self-awareness, and then also a greater physical awareness. And like recently I had, for a couple months, a real health scare. I ended up being just fine, totally fine, all recovered, all good. Even though it was scary and it sucked, and I thought, man, here I am at like 47, and maybe, you know, life's going to change for me in a way that I don't like. Maybe I won't live as long as I'd like, or I'm going to be feeble or whatever. There was a part of me that went, this is far out and this is kind of cool. And no matter what happens, I'm going to take this journey and kind of, I'm going to look forward to it. I mean, I think as you cultivate the spiritual life and the physical life and cultivate, you know, being in nature, it just all becomes more powerful. You don't really see my higher self and spirit and nature, my body, as separate. You see them as just one glorious experience.
And both of them to be enjoyed. I mean, there is a, you know, people, we always get so somber and so serious, don't we? When we start, you know, we go into a seeker's bookstore and we pick up some, you know, this or that, communicating with animals, I don't know. We get so somber and serious, but there's actually a fun to be had in it. And I've been, you know, open to the fun of the metaphysical for a long time. I mean, it's kind of, and not to go down this road too far, but it's kind of what got me in that whole world of producing shows about the phenomenon known as Sasquatch, Bigfoot. You know, there's a fun thing there's a lot of fun to get involved in the metaphysical and the spiritual world. But so long as it's not at the expense of the amazing fun in the physical world, because spirits can't enjoy a good glass of wine, but you and I can. And, you know, I find inspiration, including spiritual inspiration, in the craziest of places. And it's not necessarily in a big, long motivational talk by some got it all together type A personality, but in like a comedy movie, you know, and so, for example, when you were speaking, I was speaking about the connectivity of spirit to physical, and how sometimes spirits, I think there's envy that we have the physical, and we don't make use of it. You know, that whole youth is wasted on the young thing. Well, think of the scene, silly scene as it is, in the Pirates of the Caribbean, where you got Johnny Depp's character and Jeffrey Rush's character, and he's sitting there and he's got the captive woman, I don't know, Kate Winslet, whoever the actress was, and he just wants to watch her eat an apple. because he can't enjoy that anymore. And this is the silly analogy of what I'm talking about. How there's a, you know, in the funny Hollywood story of he's off, he's a spirit, he's a you know, a skeleton. He can't enjoy simply the taste of an apple. And wow, am I ever getting cliche here? But yeah, it's that whole thing like get up and take a bite of the apple, folks, because you have the physical ability to do so. And not wallowing, but getting lost in the esoteric spiritual world and forgetting to, you know, get out and enjoy eating an apple, I think is a mistake.
Oh, for sure. It reminds me somewhere, and I forget where I heard this, somebody said the angels in heaven envy us because we get to have the fun. Because, yeah, it's great to be an angel fluttering around and everything, but anyway, we're the ones who get to have wine and sex. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't. So it's like... So you start being grateful for this physical experience because, yeah, I plan on wine and sex pretty soon myself. So, hey.
Well, that's where I go with, you know, with some of this talk we've been saying, when, you know, anybody who might be sitting and listening to this, and I, notwithstanding your current struggle, which could be physical or financial or geographical, notwithstanding those, I understand those, but recognize that you're not alone, that everybody has their own struggle, and a lot of it can be just in the brain. And I had those struggles all the way up to, you know, probably, well, until I was 30 and I really sort of accomplished something. And I had to pull myself out of struggle by reading a lot of self-help books. You know, I think, Scott... Peck was the first book that kind of pulled me out. And I when I realized, and here's a big one, sort of tangent, but I realized, you know, one of my biggest struggles in life, and I think everybody has this, is recognizing right away that your parents' issues are not your issues. They're just fallible, mistake-making individuals. They could be amazing parents but suck at a few things, or they could suck as parents. My parents were not that great. So, and it took me a while to realize, wait a minute. This is your issue, not mine. I'm only 18. I don't deserve you. Whoa. And I was about 16 when I figured it out, and 19 when I started to secure it. And from there on, I started to do a lot of learning and growth to bring me out of that place. And I know I'm meandering here, but my point is that I remember creating one of my own struggles. I remember thinking, I'm healthy, I have no handicaps. And I, for a while, you know what my handicap or my struggle was? Boredom.
Oh, it was boredom.
Geographical boredom. I was raised in a place that did not foster effective living. More than half of probably any of my friends in high school right now are alcoholics. I was raised in a place that just didn't foster success. That was for somebody else with money, you know. And I didn't have money growing up. My parents didn't have money. I wanted to be a National Geographic photographer, and I was convinced. But that's only for rich kids. I'll never be able to do that. Lo and behold, I just finished filming for National Geographic, you know, and I'm 56. So okay, it took me 40 years. I just signed my first record deal. It took me 40 years to sign my first record deal, and that's all I want. When I was 14, I wanted to either be a rock star or a wildlife photographer. And here I am, and I kept to it. And I guess I'd be lying if I didn't say that I wished it had happened sooner, but I'd be lying to myself if I didn't admit that everything happened within the right scope of time and put me in the right place at the right time. So wherever you are right now, whatever struggle you're facing, and it might simply be geographical boredom, there's nothing wrong with you. Or you may be handicapped and in a wheelchair. Either way, where you go from here is completely your choice. And it's a fun journey. It's an awfully fun journey. I'm still on it.
Oh, I like how you seem... It seems to me like the smartest people are the ones who are like autodidactic. They teach themselves. They don't have the formal education. They may, but they really tend to teach themselves. So it seems like as a teenager and shortly after, you started being an autodidactic. You started going after, I guess you'd say, the getting of wisdom, like figuring out what life is about. So you started that wisdom path young, and you actually started it where I think, I mean, bless everybody out there, but I think most people don't ever really start doing that. They say, well, what's my programming? My parents asked me when I was a teenager, what do you want to do with your life? So I made something up. I'm going to be a plumber or a proctologist. And I just did it. And life is just this monotone drabness, because I think there's something really, really to be said, something great about people who, I don't know, were just disheveled. They were like, I'm going to figure this out. There's more meaning to it than I've been given. And I'm not going to listen to my parents because, well, I love them, but I don't want to live their life. That worked for them. But what about me? Like, it seems like you started out young as an individual going after the getting of wisdom and figuring life out.
Well, and understand, too, that you are swimming upstream. You are in an uphill climb against peer pressure, for example. There's a book out, Hillbillyology. I haven't read it, but I've talked with some friends who've read it. And apparently there's a relation in there of what I feel about myself. And that is, you know, you get to a place. So here's an example, a small, insignificant example. I'm 20, quit smoking, decide to get in shape, stop doing drugs. My good friend, best friend, buddy, hey, listen, man, Ronnie, when you come over, I got to tell you, like, I'm not going to have any smoking in my house anymore, but you smoke out on the deck, but don't, like, not in my house. What are you talking about? What do you mean I can't smoke? Really, Strout? No, I'm just asking, man. Like, I just don't want anybody smoking in the house anymore. I just made a rule. I'm going to have no smoking in the house of cigarettes in the house. Okay, well, I'm not coming over then, man. It's like, are you kidding me? So you see, that little tiny bit of kind of peer pressure makes you go, oh, I guess I'm being a schmuck. Okay, Ronnie, you can come over, and boom, backslide. Right into, you know, no. I mean, a lot of people will read and hear about, you know, in your process of growing, you do have to stand up for yourself. You do have to, unfortunately, back away from, and I say this in the lightest sense, toxic people, toxic situations. That, you know, and I held fast. And my buddy Ronnie is still one of my closest friends to this day. Did he show up for a few months? No. Because he was all pissed off because he couldn't smoke cigarettes in my house. But he got over it, you know. And so, but then again, I also pulled away from that whole crowd after a while, and, you know, was going into my music and stuff. So when we are trying to what do you mean you're going to make the best grass-fed burger? You can't do that. You've never cooked before. And you don't have any Kobe beef. All you're going to be able to get is this shitty grass-fed burger that's, you know, from the local grocery store. Yeah, you can't. Whoa. And you have to kind of get away from all those you can'ts and all the peer pressure naysayers. That's important. Important point, I think.
Oh, crazy dreams that take time are so important because, yeah, the person will say, yeah, there's no such thing as grass-fed beef. They don't really pasture raise them, etc. And you say, well, you know, I'll go out and hunt my own, and I'll go shoot one of those antelope or a deer. You know, I've always wanted to hunt. And they say, what? You're crazy. You don't even know how to shoot or have a rifle. Well, I guess I'll start learning. And they go, you're just crazy. That's going to take years. And you go, yeah, it's going to be great. And I don't know when I'm going to actually finally get that first, you know, truly pasture raised antelope burger, but I'm gonna, you know. And I have noticed that you mentioned peer pressure being an obstacle, and it's so true because there's a modern day philosopher, Neil Kramer, and he said that he made a great quote at a seminar I was at, truthful living disturbs those living untruthful lives. Mm. And they're not going to give you a break. And so you got to be ready to live that truthful life.
Oh, it illuminates the non-truth, and no one likes that. And that goes back to what we were talking about, starting with intent. If people's intent in the morning is either set at something nefarious and not nice, or there's no intention, so they fly willy-nilly, and you show up and you have intention set and it's bent on something good and honest, it insults them. It ingratiates them. They get upset about it. They don't like it. You're shining a light on the fact that they either set a bad intent and they know it and they feel guilty about it, or they didn't set any intent at all. And so we can't be boastful about this. We can't be, look at me, I'm all spiritually connected. We can't really be like that in the way we present ourselves, that's for sure.
Oh, especially when progress is just kind of getting used to being uncertain and terrified, you know?
Well, yeah, well, I'm just remembering a story that I want to say, you know, when it comes to the peer pressure. Well, you know, I pitched Survivor Man to two people in the film industry that I really respected and liked, and I was working with them and everything. And I pitched it to them in the same room and said, okay, yeah, this is what I'm thinking of doing. You know how I do that survival stuff. Well, I'm filming. And they laughed audibly, especially the one guy. And I got to say, I was a little hurt. I'm like, huh, well, I don't know. I thought it was a good idea. But, you know, the one guy already had his own TV series and the other guy worked with him heavily. And I was working with them as an editor and camera. And I was really kind of hurt. 2 weeks later, I'd signed Survivor Man to a full series for Discovery Channel. A year later, they were both asking me for a job. And so I did not, you know, in fact, I did use the energy of their negative peer pressure to say, huh, oh yeah? Just like you just laid out. Oh yeah, well, don't worry about that. And you almost want to go, hey, don't you worry about the fact that I've never hunted before or even held a gun. Don't worry about it. This is my life. I'm trying to live here, not yours.
Something I've learned recently is how negativity is, it took me, I don't know, 47 years to figure this one out, but I've really gotten to the point where, along with what you're saying, I do my best to never be negative, never have a negative response, because I kind of realized how it's like a movie. We've all seen the old Super 8 movies, you know, and they're playing along, and all of a sudden it gets stuck. And it only takes a moment of getting stuck where you actually see it burn that frame, and then the film breaks in half. And to me, that's what negativity seems to do, where it just burns up our moment, it destroys our now, and then it disconnects us from the past and the future, and we're just lost. Like, negativity of any kind is just, you lose your compass. It disconnects you from your signal and the continuity of your life and what you're about and the intention you set that morning.
And that's everything we've been talking about in terms of how I even made Survivor Man happen. That intention in the morning that I did and still do was based on positivity, not negativity. And when I'm talking to my son or my daughter, when I'm talking to younger generations, I'll tell you, as a parent, here's a phrase that I have never in my life said to my kids and will never say to any kid. We'll just get a job. Never will I say that phrase. Now, it's not that sometimes we don't need jobs to get us through a period or pay rent or do certain things. We can use jobs as a tool. Lord knows I've had every blue-collar job known to man. But the reality is that what I say to them, what I want them to do is I say, how about just find your passion? What is it your passion? Oh, you don't know? Well, start doing some things. Just anything, even if it's an inkling of a passion. You think maybe you'd like to do this, or maybe you'd like, okay, we'll go down that road. And if you get down the road and you go, ooh, I don't like this at all. This was not at all what I thought it was. So, okay, well then just, you know what? Imagine yourself in a neighborhood. Go to the next road. You know, you're not stuck. You know, cut through somebody's backyard and get onto the next street if you have to. And so that's the positive influence I try to be on even the younger generation, or somebody 56 years of age or 62, you know, in my situation right now, it's like, okay, again, what is your passion in life? Or can you start to try to find it? I know mine is music. When I deal with my music, I get emotional. And I'm working strongly on my Mother Earth presentation, my music, my performances, my recordings. I just signed a record deal, as I said, which is a thrill to me, working with some really big people, which is a thrill to me. I'm like a kid. And so I'm focused on this road. Well, part of that musical road for me is, for example, you know, I really want to get back into, I did it a little bit, film scoring. And I always think big. I want to really do film scoring. So in that zone, and I'm bringing this all back home again, I'm just starting out. Listen up, anybody listening to this. I'm 56 years old. And as far as me doing scoring for film, yes, like Hans Zimmer or Danny Elfman, well, I'm nowhere near that. So I got to make phone calls. I got to send emails. I got to put together a little web page. I could do all these things. Well, wait a minute, you're Survivor Man. You're on TV all the way around the world, and it doesn't mean a hill of beans to the fact that I'd like to score for films, because in that world, I'm nobody, and I'm 56 years old. So I'm going to use my maturity and start fresh. And that's why I like to say, you know, we're having this discussion, but I know you and I know me are no different at all than anybody listening to this right now. We have the same or versions of insecurities, the same or versions of peer pressure that's negative, the same or versions of our struggles and our challenges. But this is about living some effective lives.
Oh, yeah. And if one believes in the law of attraction, which I do, then if you're listening, you know, this was for you. This was actually tailor-made especially exactly for you. I'm sure anybody listening is going to get some gems out of this.
Well, you know, I'm just going to interrupt you, Craig, to say yes. And you and I are on the same page, because I was just thinking that 4 minutes ago. I was like, well, I wonder if we should get into the law of attraction. Absolutely. And, you know, what I'd like to do is I do need to sign off. I'm going to go into town. I've got to do a scouting for a film location for a passion project film that I'm working on that I have no money attached to. I'm just doing it myself. But I would love to continue this discussion with you sometime. And at that point, I think it would be great to go down the road of the law of attraction and all of the associated perspectives.
Well, that sounds great. I can say that I definitely got to maybe 10% of the questions and tangents we could have gone down. So,
I'm so sorry for being verbose. But
No, I enjoy it. You know, really, when we do our interviews, one of the things that we really like to do over here is we, of course, I have questions, and it's really, really good, because it's good to have a canned sales speech, you might say. It's good to have a canned interview, because sometimes you know how it's going to go, and sometimes your brain just checks out on you. So if you have enough questions, it's great, because maybe you're going to have to rely on them. But usually what I like to have happen, and what usually happens, is tangents, because really what we're trying to do is we interview inspiring people, and to basically extract that inspiration and then share it with others. Go beyond the self-help books, which I've read plenty of. I mean, I read lots of Stuart Wilde. He's one of my favorites. The Celestine Prophecy really spoke to me. There's an amazing book called A Walk Across America by Peter Jenkins that always inspired me, because this guy just said, I don't know what to do with my life, so I'm going to walk across the country. And he did, and he wrote a book, and it's amazing. Well, definitely, everybody, sign up to Survivor Man TV. Sorry to hear it's not doing super well. I definitely like the platform, and I'm glad you kind of took control of your own stuff and you're putting it out there yourself. So I hope that maybe fate changes a little bit and Survivor Man TV sticks around.
Well, I'm not going to shut it down. We're keeping it going. We're trying to see what we can do. You know what? It's simple numbers. There's either enough members to pay for editors to make films that I do, or there isn't. And right now there isn't. We've been working at it. But thank you for that push on that. It's SurvivorManTV.com. It's real simple. That'll be the home for a lot – well, all of my filmmaking creative energy. And then just keep an eye out for me musically, because I'm performing live all the time. I have an album coming out on the MRI label at the end of February, and I ain't stopping when it comes to that. So this has been a really intriguing and wonderful conversations, and it's so nice for me to be able to not answer questions like what's the grossest thing I ever ate and what's my favorite survival shelter. So I love where we went with all of this. Of course, that was the point. And if you'll have me back, I would welcome that.
Oh, we'll definitely do it. We will definitely have you back.
Absolutely. I'm sure we'll be in touch much in the future, Craig.
All right, you take care.
All right, talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
You are listening to Radiant Creators, a collaborative project composed of people whose passion, purpose, and dedication requires forging their own unique path of empowerment and livelihood. A Radiant Creator isn't making a living, they are living.